amongst yourselves.
Or to talk among yourselves, she says. in orderly fashion, of course.
I was interested in what you think the scale of post-colonial scholarship and engagement in political spheres is to be like, say, Edward Said's criticism of the Oslo Accords in the London Review of Books in 1993. Or is it to be something wider, like how far can you assume this to be a reasonable and plausible?
I think that intercessions that Said and others make in public forums is vital and important. But I think there's something, the word that they would hate, there's something foundationally wrong with the paradigm within which many post-colonial critics proceed to understand the colonial, the post-colonial, the global. And this does not mean that I don't recognize the immense contribution that critics have made to reading the literatures that were virtually unknown outside of the once colonized areas. So there are all sorts of ways in which I can celebrate the achievements of post-colonial studies in the actual work, but I've been trying to concentrate on the theoretical paradigm within which they seem, the most prominent critics, the mainstream, seem to be trapped. But please, do from the floor take up any of these, you know, turn it into a general discussion, unless you want to attack me, in which case you can attack me.
Alison?
I guess maybe my slight follow-on question to that answer, which is that the title What's Left in Post-Colonial Studies suggests a residue of a time when there was a productive reconciliation between the left and post-colonial studies. But I wonder from your talk whether, in effect, you think the very, not just the particular paradigms, but the very kind of effort to conceptually lift out of the colonial struggle meant that there was almost a need to suspend a left consciousness. And I mean, are there moments where you know you think there is a residue of something that where post-colonial and left were both in solidarity and in criticism?
Well, I think that is contentious, and it's, I wish someone else would, I mean, you know, I wish other people, I'm exhausted, I wish other people would participate in this. Incidentally, my title came from responding to Robert Young's essay, which is in the current issue of the New Literary History. Sorry, I can't talk coherently. And he called it Post-Colonial Remains, yeah. And he was punning. Now, in the next issue, my response will appear.
Right.
And I found this essay highly problematic. So I was playing on this idea of what is there, what is left for post-colonial studies to do, as well as to try and blow out of the water the claim of post-colonial studies to be, in all senses, a radical discourse. I was questioning that. I don't know if it came across, and I was questioning the mechanisms by which they do it, which is to take writers and distort them and appropriate them in the distorted form. Please, I wish other people would participate.
I'm wondering if you could speak a bit, so in the introduction you mentioned you've done some work with the World Literature Movement that seems to be coming out of, particularly comparative literature departments in the United States, and with my familiarity with this, it seems to be even more weightless. I'm just wondering if you could speak, are we finding recurrent problems to some of the issues that you outlined in your talk just now, or do you think that's a different direction entirely?
Well, there are problems in some of the most eminent persons who are participating in America in the notion of world literature. Yes, I think there are problems in the way that they approach world literature, and significantly in the way they approach peripheral literature as part of the world literature, because there is a sort of insistence that this literature is derivative, and it remains always reactionary. Everything that is written is in reaction to what came from what they call the West. I think it's for someone else from REC here to advertise our project on world literature. I'm sure they can speak more freshly and articulately on it.
I mean, maybe I could say a couple of things. Just one is a very good point about the sort of weightlessness of some of the contemporary work. We've been working, for instance, on some of Weichi DeMock's recent writings, in which there seems to be a return to a form of transcendentalism, even the notion of the idea of American literature across deep time. This notion in DeMock of somebody like Emerson in dialogue with writers from the East, for instance, where it's precisely the material circuits of the production and consumption of literature. I mean, never mind social processes that is not taken up at all. It's almost as though literature or ideas has this ability to sort of course magically around the world. And you find the same sort of thing, I think, in much of the work being done under the rubric of the sort of new translation studies in somebody like Emily Apter, for instance. And it does seem as though if one is going to take up this question of world literature, it has to be... It would...
Did I do something bad?
Yes, you were just making it impossible to be heard.
But that's... I
took it as criticism of what I was saying. No, just hold it to you when you're speaking. So yes, I think the sense of what we're trying to do in the project is to ask about the relationship between world literature and the world system. Is there a way of mobilizing that discussion of the world capitalist system from Wallerstein and the world system theorists without being reductive? I suppose would be the.
Am I doing that?
Yes. Benita's main role in the REC project is for technical assistance.
I don't understand how these things work. Maybe you don't like me.
Any other? Yes, and I think one there afterwards. Go ahead.
Thanks very much. My name is Nicola Tracht and I work in the politics department here. So postcolonial studies is still quite peripheral actually to the discipline that I work in. And because of its peripheral nature, I guess it still does carry that mantle of being quite radical in comparison to other dominant approaches within the discipline. My question is really to do with the sort of material incentives that academics and intellectuals have to produce critical scholarship or scholarship that's critical of the status quo and how the whole problem that you're alluding to about postcolonial studies maybe needs to be thought of as a much wider struggle of both within higher education and also more widely in society. So it's sort of like a chicken and an egg, maybe, that the critiques that are needed of neoliberalism are difficult to formulate within a context where people are rewarded for being complicit with neoliberalism. Mm. And therefore, because those critics aren't there, it allows the reproduction of neoliberalism. So I just wonder if you've got some thoughts.
No, I just think that I assume that within your own field there's a contest with some persons pressing for a critique and other persons, you know, other members of the discipline going elsewhere. Is that what you're suggesting? That what is being produced is overcome by conformism?
And yeah, that the conformists are in the majority at the moment.
Yeah, but I assume there are some dissident voices producing work outside of Marxist circles, I assume so. Is this so?
Yes, of course, there are critical voices.
Yeah. And are they connected with historical materials or any of the left forums, or are they independent scholars?
That's a good question. I mean, I don't know if anybody's done that sort of mapping out.
Well, I mean, who stands out as a radical theorist?
In my discipline. Yeah. Wow.
Because
my mind is black.
Yeah, you see, we won't know, people like me won't know unless they operate within the broader spectrum of left thinking. We won't know about the specificity.
I guess that we've appropriated the social theorists and some post-colonial theorists. So radical thinkers would be Marx and those writing within the Marxist tradition. Also some within post-colonial studies in the broader way that you defined it, including people like Fanon and Said, obviously, yourself. But these critical voices...
Who doesn't know what to feel?
But we appropriate them into our discipline.
That's interesting. Maybe Robert Young is right. The post-colonial studies has penetrated every segment of the consciousness of the age.
You again, too.
I just wondered whether this is to you, really, Neil, whether your investment and others' investment in talking about world literatures and world systems is an effort to cut the Gordian knot, or at least circumvent some of the contamination or problems that have accumulated through post-colonial studies. Whether that's true, or whether, you know, there's another explanation for why that has arisen.
I'm tempted to return that question actually to Alison, in that sense of the because I experience post-colonial studies as being at a I wouldn't say in crisis, but I would say dissolving in some sense. It's being overtaken, and a good thing too, as it were, by new ventures in forms of comparativism, in discussions of world literature, in arguments about regionalism, a whole series of new initiatives. And so to me, there's a sense in which the... Of course, we will continue to read. There will be, one will continue to read works from post-colonial places, as it were. And if the post-colonial is a historical marker, I mean, it's an untranscendable horizon. I mean, it isn't contemporary Nigeria post-colonial. But that very term, post-colonial, names a set of problems that may not be the ones that literary theory is particularly interested in, or more particularly that writers are particularly interested in describing. So for me, it would not be a bad thing if post-colonial studies was superseded by a range of other ventures. What one has to try and fight for is that those ventures be accountable. In other words, you should never fall back behind the gains made by post-colonial studies. Perhaps Nicola's point is a good one there, that there's a sense in which, for those of us who have worked in the field for a million years or whatever, that don't we in fact have an unhealthy investment in making sure that the field keeps reproducing itself? I'm not so sure that that's a good thing. I quite like the fact, for instance, that the new debates on Fanon or on any, in any aspect, that Benita and I spent sort of much of the 90s fighting the good fight as we saw it against a certain line. And for younger researchers today, that's ancient history. And it's a good thing too, because they're not as it were going back and just saying the same things as though we've never spoken or as though they've never spoken. So it does seem to me as though it's imaginable to me that post-colonial studies won't exist in 10 years' time, but that that a new form of inquiry will exist, which is tremendously exciting. I don't know, Alison, if that's.
Freshly so, by not being necessarily have to be, yoked to or viewed through post-colonial.
Mm-hmm. Yoked to?
Or kind of the portal of reading them, that they're no longer kind of post-colonial theorists. We can think of them, as Marxist, global Marxist theorists, or we can think of them as, world system theorists, the Marx of world system theorists, that perhaps that what post-colonialism did was not just to try and imagine the shape of the future, but also the shape of the past, and that if we kind of see it as you describe it, then what's also released newly is kind of, significant texts or thinkers or theorists from the past, as well as potential for the future, I think. So, what's left, maybe what came before, as well as what's yet to come.
Trying to come back in, and then.
Sorry,
and then up on the top there.
I study history and politics.
Maureen Han, and then Maureen. Sorry, go ahead. Stop.
I study history and politics, so my knowledge of some of the concepts like contrapuntalism, I'm sure some of you would be aghast to know, is minimal. One of the things which I think Said was really engaged with all his life, and which is it seems to me as an outside perspective as being a central problem and a challenge for post-colonial studies is how to engage in the political, how to get out of the ivory tower. It's so important that the scholarship, instead of just reproducing itself, which is the conversation going along, actually achieves some sort of emphasis on policy. And I was just wondering, where does that leave us?
Well, if one is a public intellectual, and very few of us can be public intellectuals, then one has access to mainstream journals, London Review, books, Left journals, the New Left Review. You have access in which you can propagate your views. And Said was very radical on certain things, very important. But we know that Trier, for example, participated in the so-called university of the Occupy movement. Now, whatever I think about the Occupy movement, it was an attempt and an effort. Certainly the university was an important venue to bring ideas to. And that has been done on a smaller or less starry scale than someone like Said. I don't know, that probably doesn't answer your question, but then somebody else can answer it.
Imre, you
want to? I won't answer that one. Maybe you'll answer it. I'm conscious, I'm in some ways re-articulating what some of the non-literary folk have been asking. And I'll ask it in a different way, even though I'm sort of in literary folk. Is part of what is at issue here the commitment of the post-colonial to the literary? Is that the elephant in the room?
No.
When I hear we're, many of us here are literary theorists, we study literature, that's our interest, and we then are interested in the context and the circuits and the situations and the politics of those literatures. But when I hear lots of the figures cited here, some of the people that we might call anti-colonial, like Cabral or Fanon, or the work of somebody like Luxembourg or Gramsci, neither of whom spoke very much about culture and literature. Gramsci did, but it wasn't the main focus of what he did in the Prison Notebooks. I wonder if it's that specific commitment to the literary that dragged post-colonial studies in a particular direction. And that now, kind of coming out of that, whether, maybe I'll ask Neil this too, whether trying to map the literary back to some kind of thing that the post-colonial could have been is the right way to think the literary. Or at least what one should do is say that the interest is in the literary, not necessarily the political. And those aren't one and the same thing. I don't know if that's clear, but it worries me when somebody in political theory or political science is interested in the post-colonial, because they're kind of interested in that mess of stuff about the nature of the subject and othering and so on and so forth. And I can see how that would come into certain dimensions of contemporary political theory. But what gets dropped out was the origins of that in a very specific moment, like 1986, those essays from Spivak and Baba come out. And they're quite interested in a specific cultural object, which might not be the one that was the, it might not have been the place to articulate the broader politics that post-colonial theory or studies or literature was intent on doing, if that was the project we did.
Well, amongst the most recent and prominent post-colonial critics, Deepak Chakrabarty, they're not talking about literature at all. They are doing meta-critiques of globalization. And Robert Young, both these essays, which were taken initially, because I think they were invited as representative of the post-colonial field, both of them are meta-theoretical. And shallowly so, if I may say so, but they are meta-theoretical. There's no literary input at all. And a great deal of the work is distinct. It is entirely theorizing. And there's not a murmur of literature. If you look through the interventions, especially, there is some literature, but a lot of it is meta. It is theoretical. I don't know if you... It's not... The literary has almost become subordinated for these particular critics. They don't write about literature anymore.
Maureen?
I think Imre wanted you...
Oh, Imre, did you want to come back?
He wanted you to respond on something. He said he was asking the question of both of us.
My question about so world literature as a possible outcome of this.
No, I think it's a great question for me, if I can just spend a minute answering this. But it's always distressed me in some sense that the literary underpinnings of the initial post-colonialist project have been forgotten, and not least by post-colonial studies, post-colonial scholars, post-colonialists themselves. I think it has a lot to do with the particular force and effectivity of the turn to language in the human sciences as a whole, which seemed to allow an opening for people working in literary theory to assume that they were talking about social processes in general. I mean, meaningful action considered as a text. We can read texts, therefore we can comment on Occupy or whatever it would be. For me, there's always been a an interest in asking the questions of what literature can do that other forms of social practice or cultural practice can't do. But I've been worried by terms like hybridity, for instance, the way in which globalization is often used, in which, I mean, that weightlessness that Benita spoke of from Said is seems to be characteristic of what we do. When I want to look at, let's say, debates on globalization or on anti-colonial movements, I turn to sociology or political science or to history. I wouldn't move immediately to read Homi Bhabha if I want to ask questions about immigration. I think that there is there's a kind of a sort of hubris or an arrogance that has come. That may not be the culture, may not be the fault of post-colonialists themselves. It has a lot to do with the particular tasks taken on by literary theory in general at a certain time, or cultural theory more generally, cultural studies too. I mean, all of these things are implicated, I would say. It's a very interesting sort of debate, I suppose. Maureen, and then... Okay. Yes, that's right. I only picked you up because you have to have a question, Maureen.
I have a question about Charles Bolger's group, because you just said that when you want to address these larger issues, you go to political theory, you don't go to theorists. Do you go to writers? I asked the writers.
Well,
do you go to the literature, you know, the thing that we used to call literature, whether it be nonfiction or fiction? The other question is for you, which is, you were uncharacteristically... You hear it when you say, well, Edward Said can go and be a public intellectual, but you know, most of us can't. And I take issue with that, especially if you're trying, suggesting very rightly, in my opinion, that there should be more of a marriage of thought and action, that this should be somewhere.
Yeah, I guess there's been, it's both a... It's a combination of laziness and modesty that some of us don't put ourselves about in venues other than, you know, very closed venues, and just hope that what the environment has written will get about somehow. I know one should go to Coventry Town Hall and offer a lecture.
Or appear in Alfred.
Create one's own spaces or create other spaces. Why not wait for the London Review of Books to like you? There, you know, the spaces aren't there, you make them.
What, so start a new journal?
Find new places for public intellectuals to communicate with new audiences.
Good, but that's for the young ones.
Let's take just the last question, then we need to break and we can continue outside.
Just the point about what is in fact left of post-colonial studies. I'm a politics student, and I've noticed in a development module this last year that the course began with science orientalism and pretty much proceeded to invoke the category of the West, and to the extent that it became basically common sense among students. The West was always the subject of debates in seminars. It would always be written back to the West, and I think this was rather than, you know, the course starting with Marx or something like that. And so it would always be about neoliberalism rather than capitalism. It would always be about the West. So in fact, it does seem like what is left of post-colonial theory or Edward Said, it seems to be an immense common sense among students at least, especially in this politics department. So I suppose if we're leaving behind or we're moving beyond in a positive way, post-colonial theory in the English department, there needs to be some sort of interdisciplinary debate about this, make politics, theory and politics more aware of the development, because it seems like it's become so popular within at least that module that you know, we're not really leaving it behind in one sense if we are in the English department.
Yes, and it's gratifying to know that certain ideas have filtered into genuinely, you know, across disciplines. I don't know if you're coming on to the future of post-colonial studies. I think that there are too many scholars who... There are many scholars who will make a transition, who are not protecting their patch, and that will see that persons who work on post-colonial literatures are going to make a very easy transition to working on world literature, and they can bring a lot to it because they really know peripheral writings, although they need to extend it beyond once colonized to the other peripheries. So I think that is a transition that can be made. As to the post-colonial theorists, they've got nowhere to go.
I'm not going to answer that.
Why?
Well, was it a question? I mean, I'm not terribly worried about them. I don't think we can perhaps pass around the hat for them. Or I mean, I think we need to stop because we have arranged a dinner this evening. And as
not
I understand,
a dinner, a supper.
Sorry, not a dinner, a supper. But Sorsha has erected a shebeen outside, as I understand, so that there will be a brief reception. So please come and ask questions of Benita there. Thank you very much for coming.